Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. The Linnaeus Teaching Garden, a small two-acre demonstration garden on the southeast corner of Woodward Park, is celebrating its 10th anniversary tomorrow. With a lot of free gardening advice and literature, a lecture on new plant varieties, a giveaway for the first 500 attendees, and a plant sale. Linnaeus Garden has been a testing ground for horticultural companies to test their latest varietals against the unpredictable Oklahoma climate, which can range from heat and drought in one season to cold, wet, and damp with regularity. And this small garden has also been a teaching garden, teaching over 300 volunteers, but it's also been a small spot for all sorts of people to relax and take in the beauty of the spot. All of these factors were part of the vision Tulsa Garden Center Director of Horticulture Barry Fugit had when he first proposed the garden over 12 years ago. But the success and attraction of the garden has far surpassed that vision. He joins us today to talk about the 10th anniversary, what they've learned over the 10 years, and what people can expect to see this weekend from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Linnaeus Teaching Garden. Barry Fugit is my guest today. Barry Fugit, welcome back to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
Always my pleasure, always.
And congratulations on the 10th anniversary of the Linnaeus Garden. I know this has been a dream of yours for going back far beyond 10 years, mm-hmm. but what are your feelings about the garden as it approaches its 10th anniversary this weekend?
You know, Rich, I was in the garden this morning right after daybreak, and I know this, I don't want this to sound hokey, but I was just walking through that modest garden of 2 acres of intensely laid out plant material and water features and whatever. And I had to almost pinch myself that, you know, like you say, that this thing has materialized, the public has supported it. Over 300 volunteers have gone through 12 weeks of training in order to volunteer there, and they have taken emotional ownership of it. So there's just so many good stories that's coming out of that spot in the southeast corner of Woodward Park, and we're so happy about it.
What was the purpose of this particular garden?
Well, a quick background was I had worked for 30 years for Oklahoma State University as a horticulturist, and I had the privilege of starting the Master Gardener program many, many years ago. I love working with volunteers. That's where enthusiasm comes, and people that give of their time free of charge, you know they're committed. And so after I had left OSU, the Garden Center asked that I come over and teach some classes there. I was happy to do that. And it just occurred to me that corner of Woodward Park was not used for much of anything. And so talking to some commercial nurseries, I'd worked with commercial nurseries around the country for those 30 years, and they were happy to donate plant material. Paystone was happy to do a couple of $100,000 worth of walk layouts for us. And it just all kind of came together, and I was shocked and greatly pleased that the public got on board and the volunteers got on board. The neat thing about Linnaeus is that other than myself and one assistant, all the work that you see in that garden is meticulously cared for. All of that is done by volunteers who have taken different sections of the garden, and there's a curator for each section. And then you've got over 100 of those 300 that are out there almost every day that's just trimming and taking and loving on that garden.
And, of course, the teaching is a big part of the garden.
Exactly.
Yeah. You're not only teaching your volunteers who are caring for it, mm-hmm. but you're teaching visitors.
Right.
And you're also, because you have this relationship with these commercial growers, you're trying out a lot of different plant varieties in mm-hmm. our Oklahoma climate, which can be challenging. It can be 115, or it could be zero, or it could be incredibly wet or incredibly dry.
just wait around, you know. One of those will sure to pop up.
So what have you learned about some of the plants that you've had over those 10 years as far as what works, what doesn't? I would think that by the time a commercial grower sends you a plant, they pretty much know it's going to work in a climate like ours. Or do they not?
Well, most of the time they do. Although, for instance, last year, Polson International Rose Growers sent us 200 roses with one request. They say, you know, they're in Portland and then they're in Northern Europe. They literally didn't know what those roses were going to do in the mid part of the continent. And so they wanted to know only a couple of things, is find a place for them, if you will. Tell us what they do in terms of black spot, what they do in terms of Oklahoma heat. I understand it really gets hot in central U.S. And then there's a virus out there called rose rosette. Tell us what that. And so we're evaluating them for that purpose and using those up on the rose terrace. But teaching is a part of our name, and I emphasize that all the time, Linnaeus Teaching Garden. And, you know, our namesake, Carl Linnaeus, was a botanist and an ecologist living in the 1700s. That's who we named it after. But he was a consummate teacher. He, you know, the legend about him was he never met a student that he wasn't willing to take them on a tour of nature and just download information into them. And in a mini sort of way, that's what we do at Linnaeus. When you show up at Linnaeus, you're free to take a tour on your own. We will walk you through the garden, answer all of your questions. But they come to Linnaeus, and we are there to just celebrate nature and gardening. But you're right, we do run across some really cool plants from time to time.
Now, those roses, how are they handling Oklahoma weather so far?
Some of them are doing very well, but about half of them are not. And that was the understanding. Those that are not, now we will take them out. And they said, of course. But there's a couple of white varieties that are just numbered varieties at this time that are just doing exceptionally well. And then two beds over will be another one of their roses, their genetics that they own, that's just eaten up with black spot and having some issues. So it's an opportunity for us to give feedback to the commercial industry that donates all these plants.
Now, is that common just from, say, the microclimate of a particular area?
Yeah.
Some plants are going to do well and other plants are not?
Absolutely, and even within the same genus. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, on those roses, those 200 varieties of roses, yeah, the genetics are similar, very similar. They're all Rosa in the genus Rosa. But, you walk through there, you see dramatic differences in how they're responding to the conditions of Oklahoma in just 1 year. So they've only been in the ground 1 year, and I can tell you already that there's some of those that I would not invest in. But there's a couple that when they come on the market, and those roses that are in Woodward Park for Polson, they'll be out in 2017. So I'm going to give them, I think, some good feedback and say, boy, you know, you probably ought to think twice about using this particular variety here in Oklahoma, unless you're going to tell somebody that they're going to need to spray weekly for some of these conditions, which increasingly the public is not wanting to do.
Now, is that something you do? You're kind of, it's about we'll care, we'll water it,
right,
but we're not going to do all the extra tender care. You're there to see if the plants will actually survive in the climate.
That is exactly right. I'm glad you brought that up. At Linnaeus, we laughingly but seriously say that we will take these plants from industry from coast to coast. They ship them to us. But we're not going to spray them, but we are going to give them best growing conditions in terms of soil and fertility and watering habits and all of that and get them in the right exposure with regard to the sun. But after that, it's up to them. And we will take out at Linnaeus anywhere from a fifth to a fourth of that plant material every year if it's just doing ho-hum. Industry has other stuff that they want to send us, so we're always looking at what's growing well. What I encourage listeners to do before heading to a local retail nursery to buy plants, come and see plants in context, in a garden setting that simulates what you might see in a home garden. So we're not a botanical garden. We're not a research garden. We are a demonstration/teaching garden. So it's a great opportunity to come with pad and pencil in hand and say, I like the way that that's looking next to this kind of shrub, or I like it next to this fountain that you've got going on here. And then take that list to your nursery, and you're going to make better choices on plant material.
Now, do your local nurserymen around here, the commercial nurserymen, do they sort of pay attention to what's going on at the garden?
They do. They do. Most of our plant material comes from the wholesale nursery industry, like Greenleaf and Monrovia on the West Coast and what have you. But local nurseries like Southwood are very big supporters of the Linnaeus Teaching Garden and others. And they do, particularly if I write about a plant and say it's really flourishing. There's a redbud right now that's just a killer that we've got planted right next to Linnaeus. But the local retail nurseries love to get that information as well, because they know if we're going to be right about it and telling people about it, that it's going to build demand for that plant. So everybody benefits, the wholesale industry, retail industry, garden consumers, everyone in the circle is benefiting from Linnaeus.
My guest today is Barry Fugit, the Director of Horticulture at the Tulsa Garden Center. The Linnaeus Teaching Garden, located at the southeast corner of Woodward Park, is celebrating its 10th anniversary this Saturday. Festivities get underway at 9 o'clock. There'll be some plant giveaways. You're giving away some hydrangeas. Mm-hmm. There'll be a lecture at 10:30 with horticulture specialists from Proven Winners.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume all of your volunteers will be out in force to show people around the garden and sort of explain how the garden works. You have virtually every sort of aspect that you would probably want to have in a garden, a rock garden. There's a water garden. There's areas of full sun. There's areas of shade. And
vegetable garden, an herb garden.
Yeah,
you bet it. And Yeah, it's just we could also call it the Linnaeus Ideas Garden.
Yeah.
Because we want you to come and leave with ideas that you can implement.
Now, you mentioned about a fifth to a fourth of your plant material will change out during the course of a summer because of it not showing off mm-hmm. all that great.
Yeah.
How often, like even your good stuff, does it change out every couple of years?
Yeah.
I mean, you're basically restocking this garden at different times, so you get to see a variety of new varietals.
Yeah, exactly. We want this garden to be cutting edge. And so when you come to the Linnaeus Teaching Garden, again, it's if you don't have a pad and pencil in hand, come inside and we'll give you one. But you're going to see plants that are flourishing here. And if they're not flourishing, they're not going to stay at Linnaeus. And, I mean, that's the deal we have with industry. So we're always looking for those. And then a lot of times, Rich, we take out plants that are doing fine. But we have a limited amount of space, a little over 2 acres, and we've got them on pretty close spacing. But there's times when we take out plants and people are, why are you taking that out? Because we have something we think might be even better. And so those are just tools for us, and we're recycling them all the time.
Now, I can see where this is a resource for the serious gardener, the backyard gardener, but it also is sort of a resource for people just looking to lower their stress level at lunch hour.
Yeah.
You have a lot of people that just sort of come out
and
hang.
We really, really do. I could tell you stories for hours about people that have just come to the Linnaeus Garden. Somebody blessed me the other day and said, you know, I come to the Linnaeus Garden when I'm sad, and I come to the Linnaeus Garden when I'm happy. The garden seems to just minister to people in both ways. I had a father and daughter that I met in the garden recently, and she had just come, the daughter had just come from a cancer treatment at St. John's. And she said, Daddy, before taking me home, take me someplace pretty. She said, I just need to see something pretty. And he brought her to Linnaeus. And I thought, you know, that was enough to make it all worthwhile even building the Linnaeus Teaching Garden. But we're having so many incidences like that where people just come. There's a little place to eat there that the public has laughingly or jokingly named it the Cafe Linnae. It overlooks the garden, and so people bring their whatever box lunch they have and just look over the water feature. It's just a magnificent view up there on an intimate scale.
One of the other things I find is really interesting is because the scale is intimate, it doesn't matter if you have a big yard, a small yard, or maybe even a pocket yard, or maybe even a large patio.
Right.
There are ideas that you can glean from the garden to, say, put a large back patio, small vegetable garden out there. One of the things I find is interesting is the innovative ways you demonstrate how to grow food vegetables and you know, sustainables.
Yeah,
in containers and in very small little beds. Is that a direct sort of line for those that don't have a large backyard or a large garden area?
Exactly. In fact, my son-in-law told me the other day he's not ready to put in a big veggie garden. They've been married only a few years. But I said, you know, look at what we're doing at Linnaeus with whiskey barrels, just recycled whiskey barrels. The other day, Rich, we pulled up three different varieties of potatoes that had been, we planted them in late February, and I took pictures of it. It was just amazing the amount of potatoes that were underneath those plants in those whiskey barrels. A huge amount that's, you know, materially affect your budget, probably not, but 5, 6, 8 meals worth, and just the fun of growing them yourself, to go from planting to watching them mature and harvest them. It's just completing the cycle. So the veggie garden gets a lot of interest in how to do that. Those cattle panels, one of the local folks that sell cattle panels, and we sold more cattle panels.
What is a cattle panel?
Well, a cattle panel is a 4 by 8 foot sheet of galvanized wire. It's a big gauge wire that you can do. And so they literally use it for cattle pens and hog pens and what have you. But what we do as Linnaeus is use it for all kind of trellises, and we bend them for as a teepee-like situation for cucumbers and gourds to run up. And they're very inexpensive. They last forever. Gee whiz, no, but it's very practical. All the things that you can, we've got espaliered fruit trees growing on them. So we use them in 5, 6 different ways there. And people see that and go, that's exactly what I need at home to grow, you know, to run some tomatoes up or to run a grapevine up or something like that. So just ideas upon ideas.
You're talking about the fruit trees, the espaliered fruit trees.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at those, you say, God, that's a lot of work. Yeah. Is it really a lot of work?
No. But it's scary. You're absolutely right. People look at that and go, I could never do that. And I just, all one does is put one central stem of a tree, a pear tree, apple tree, peach tree, whatever you're going to do, and then conform that as it begins to grow out, conform it to whatever pattern you want and cut out everything that you don't want. And it's literally about that simple. And it's amazing how people, once they start doing it, they catch on to it.
You just prune fairly regularly, and all of a sudden
When you put them on a west fence or a south-facing fence, they get that early sun against that wall, whatever you're growing against. So that was a technique used in castles and fortified situations in Europe many, many centuries ago. And getting some of that fruit inside rather than outside where the barbarians would get it on. So they would raise it on walls inside. So that comes to us from great long tradition.
Now, one of the things you've been doing the last few years, again, it's trying to figure out what the best plant varieties are. And that's sort of one of the goals of the garden, along with teaching and educating, is you've been doing like a bed of a single plant, and you're actually having patrons vote on the best varieties when they come through. What have you learned from that?
It's been fascinating. We've done this. This is the third year we've done it. The first year we did lantanas, and a very popular plant. But these are 18 beds of the newest stuff out there in a particular genus. And then last year we did periwinkle. This year we're doing angelonia. Or summer snapdragons. And I would encourage the public in another 2 or 3 weeks when you're in the woodwork, come by and see these. The hotter it gets, the better those summer snapdragons do. And they are blue and they are white and they are lavender. And now they're two tones or variegated flowers on these things. Very excited. But yeah, we give them a sheet of paper to the public and say, would you mind just going out there and marking off which ones you think are just, you know, if I were going to put this in my yard, oh, this is the variety, number 18 or number 14. And then we share that with nurserymen, and then they try to make sure, because it really does give you a good sense of not so much, they're not evaluating it from disease perspective and all of that. They're just saying, which one of these do you find most aesthetically pleasing or attractive?
It's sort of like you're going down the row at a nursery shop, and you go, I like that one.
But here you're getting to see what was out last year and what's coming out next year all in one place, and a very quick just stroll down this. It's very pretty. But I guarantee you, you're going to leave going, I really do want that number 12 or 13 in my garden next year.
Well, a big part of the garden is not only teaching the public, but teaching your volunteer staff that do take care of this garden. Right. Tell us a little about the teaching process that you go through with your volunteers. You have like a 12-week course?
12-week program. It starts the first Wednesday after Labor Day. But we get people who are looking for a quality volunteer experience. And so they come to the Tulsa Garden Center. I do a little PowerPoint and explain what the training is like, what the volunteer opportunities are like at Linnaeus. And then if they think that that's something that would really interest them and that they would enjoy, then we embark on a 12-week training program talking about basic botany and how to prune properly and how to grow virtually all types of plants. And then we work them into the 300-plus volunteer corps that we have at Linnaeus, and they get to choose what area of the garden or what activity, whether it's children's programs or seniors' programs or whatever program it is, but the volunteers get to choose all of that.
Oh, and they're also actually working the garden?
Yeah. In fact, 90%+ of all the maintenance at Linnaeus is done by these volunteers, that they take ownership of that herb garden or that rose area or whatever it is, yeah. A great deal of hands-on training in the garden. So we want you to get personal skills in gardening.
So can you describe some of those hands-on? I mean, is it just about how to site plants, how to site them in the sun?
How to site plants, how to choose and select the best herbs for your garden, how to take care of them in a way that makes it, whether they're in containers or in ground, the water garden, how to work with these koi. We've got about 25 large koi in that pond. The feeding practices, how do we maintain clarity in that water? And so if water gardening interested you, you might be one of 25 or more people that most of your Linnaeus hours is done in the water gardening. And so there's a fellowship there. There's a training that goes on there. So it's just a really great program. And I might add that when people come this Saturday, that we're going to give them some brand new genetics on that hydrangea. This Nantucket Blue is a killer hydrangea. It's a semi-dwarf. Only gets 3.5 to 4 feet tall and wide. But unlike old hydrangeas that bloomed once each year, and they might not even do that if the winter got the buds the previous year, this Nantucket Blue, every time it makes new growth, it makes new flowers. So Nantucket Blue will be in bloom they're starting to come into bloom now, and we'll have them in Linnaeus Garden that's in bloom into mid to late October. And we're going to give one to the first 500 people that enter.
Yeah, now when you say it's a Nantucket blue, I've always known that hydrangeas could be blue or pink depending on your soil type. Is that true with this one?
This is hydrangea macrophylla, and virtually all of those will be blue or pink based on your pH. So if you will get the one that we're going to give you is going to be blue. Uh-huh. But if you put it in an alkaline soil or a pH down around 6.5, 6.4, Yeah, it'll revert to pink. But I got to tell you, when they're reverting to pink, my wife prefers the pink, actually, but I like the blue. So we have to compromise on that.
Now, you mentioned children's programs and senior programs. Mm-hmm. What sort of programs does the Linnaeus do for children and for older adults?
We limit it to small groups of children, 15 to 20, and we have little green thumbs in which we've just started doing that. And so we're taking them into the garden and harvesting veggies. We're doing crafts with them using garden plants. Our seniors program, we honor seniors each year with a wonderful program in October. We have assisted living folks coming to the garden and being bused into us, and we give them programs and just love on those people at Linnaeus. Linnaeus is just such an incredible tool for ministering to people in whatever need that they might have. And, Rich, one other thing. On the at 10:30 Saturday, this speaker from Proven Winners is really, I mean, he is one great horticulturist. And so gardeners who are really wanting to make good garden choices really need to hear this. Nelson Darden is his name, but he is a horticulturist with Proven Winners, an international, probably the finest introducer of new plants and new plant genetics and bedding plants and perennials in the world. And so he's going to be there at 10:30 to give you a heads up on what's really good out there and what's going to be coming in down the pipeline.
The Linnaeus Teaching Garden will be celebrating its 10th anniversary this Saturday, beginning at 9 a.m. with a giveaway of those blue hydrangeas. And then at 10:30, the lecture. And, of course, there'll be lots of activities at the garden with, I assume, most of your volunteers on staff out there. And
lots of food and drink. And yeah. It's going to be the happiest place in Tulsa.
So let me ask you, from that dream you had when you saw that vacant piece of property 15 years ago out at in Woodward Park, what's been the biggest surprise over the 10 years of the Linnaeus Garden to you that you know, maybe the unexpected turn or something that you were not expecting from that dream, or is it just surpassed that dream?
It was more of not so much a surprise as a fulfillment of a great hope, and that was, as I mentioned earlier, I thought at the beginning of this that if Nurseman would participate in this, it wouldn't just be a matter of donating plants. You would actually benefit by doing this. And so we're seeing that happen. The hope was, but we didn't know that it was going to happen, is that the Linnaeus Teaching Garden is overwhelmingly taken care of by volunteers. Oklahoma gets hot in the summertime, and when you see people out there in their 50s and 60s and 70s in 100-degree heat just loving and taking care of this garden, I hope that would happen, and they're out there with me. I never ask a volunteer to do what I'm not doing. But it was more great joy that the concept has taken root and producing such a little Eden in the midst of downtown.
You surprised by the number of visitors that come, or were you expecting that?
Well, I was hoping. I was certainly hoping. And our numbers have grown every one of those 10 years. And this year, we're ahead of last year. And almost daily, certainly weekly, people step into the garden and go, I had no idea this was back here. So just getting the word out, and so appreciative of you and letting us do that there is a hidden jewel in arguably Tulsa's most venerable park, which is Woodward Park, in the corner of Woodward Park, a piece of that property that was used for nothing. Almost no one ever went down in that park. Now, it is arguably the prettiest part of that park and blessing a lot of children, a lot of grown-ups.
Now, the Linnaeus Garden is celebrating 10 years. Now you have the Tulsa Botanic Garden out on the far edge of town that has two gardens open and plans to continue to grow. Right. You have the gathering space that's going to also be very much landscape. Is this a good sign for the gardening community that you have all these assets?
You know what? When all of these things are online and the Master Gardener program is doing a great work there on 15th Street as well, when you look at all of those amenities for a mid-sized city like Tulsa, it's something that we can all be proud of. And as you and I were just casually talking earlier, Oklahoma weather can be a huge challenge. And to see that kind of garden investment in a mid-sized city in a part of the country that can really hammer you if you're a gardener. To see all of that come together in this city is nothing short of miraculous. And then you throw in Philbrook's garden and Gilcrease's gardens. I mean, this is a garden city, no question about it.
All right. Well, Barry Fugit, we hope a lot of people come out tomorrow. Good. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Barry Fugit is the Director of Horticulture for the Tulsa Garden Center. The Linnaeus Teaching Garden will celebrate its 10th anniversary at the garden tomorrow morning from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. in Woodward Park. The first 500 visitors to the garden will receive a free one-gallon shrub. At 10:30, there will be a lecture from an industry leader. And following the lecture, volunteers will be selling varieties of new annuals. More information at tulsagardencenter.com. studiotulsa.com. You're listening to Studio Tulsa. Here's the comments of Mark Dara.
Miss Headley was my eighth grade English teacher. She had never married, she had no children, and she had lived so long she no longer had any family. We were cruel to her, as only junior high students can be. When I became her pupil, Miss Headley had already spent too many years in the classroom. She had resigned herself to the futility of teaching sentence diagramming to pubescent children. She had long before lost interest in the story arc and character development of Rudyard Kipling's Captains Courageous, our assigned reading that semester. Her students recognized her lack of interest by her haphazard efforts. For my classmates and me, never had so little been taught in so long a period of time. Several members of my 8th grade English class verged on being juvenile delinquents. They would have posed a challenge to teachers of greater vigor and youth. Miss Headley was utterly lost in their mean-spirited antics and disruptions, and our classes would descend into irredeemable chaos. It wasn't just the bad kids who rebelled at the tedium of Miss Headley's class. The rest of us did too, and it was worse when we were bored or not challenged, which was most of the time. Miss Headley would call on David, but Jimmy would answer. When she turned to write on the chalkboard, someone would make a disgusting scatological noise. When Miss Headley got confused and lost her place, which was often, the woman-child Black Panther in our class would lead us in chants of, "Free Huey! Free Huey! Free Huey!" Someone figured out if we asked Miss Headley about New York, we could avoid both the purposelessness of her English lessons and our juvenile bedlam. She'd gone to a girls' school in New York and returned to Gotham every summer to watch the latest Broadway plays, visit the museums, and see new sights. "Tell us about New York, Miss Headley," one of us would say. She would pull out a box of playbills from a storage closet and spend the rest of the hour telling about the productions and performers she had seen, the things she had done, and the places she had visited. Her eyes twinkled, and even in the void of my 8th grade soul, I recognized a melancholy longing in her voice. When Christmas came around that year, Miss Headley left and never came back. My last class with her, a nightmare of chaos and meanness. We later bragged to each other we forced her into retirement, but none of us could have been really proud of it. Today I am much closer in age to Miss Headley when she taught us than I am to my 8th grade self and classmates. I grieve for her lost dreams to return to New York, her lost youth, and the Broadway plays that represented for her the good life. Maybe I grieve, too, for my own lost dreams, and all lost dreams. My wife and I recently traveled to New York. We saw an opera and ate in fine dining establishments. We saw a Broadway musical and went to Coney Island. I don't have a box full, but I do have several playbills. Would you like to hear about New York?
Mark Dara is a local attorney and the author of A Catalog of Common People and a regular contributor to Studio Tulsa. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. By the way, this coming Monday on Studio Tulsa, I'll be welcoming Dr. John Schumann as a new permanent guest host on Mondays. His Medical Monday program on Studio Tulsa will feature interviews with researchers, practitioners, and a variety of participants in our highly complex healthcare field. I hope you'll welcome him this coming Monday. Studio Tulsa is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.